January 1, 2023, it's a lot for Pedro show.
Well, I don't have many records in that era now, but I do plan to get them. I plan to include that in my repertoire, you know, all these old traditional things. I've been trying recently to search myself, you know, try to find things that are reminiscent that sound like those things. But I'm really going to do some work on that soon.
For Pedro Show. Happy New Year. Happy 2023, good people. Good Sunday. Started the show off with John Coltrane getting asked about music he wants to listen to by Carl Eric Lindgren. Some Swedish guy. I think on another show I called him fucking Dutch. Both countries are great and stuff, but I should get that straight, so I apologize. This was on March 22nd, 1960. So, after that was Numb Tongue with Phantom Limbs. And because of the wonder of them Estonian software engineers with their scrap invention, I got with me Bobby Hatfield.
Hey.
Brother Bobby. A week later, right, or 10 days later, we're back in the ring.
Something like that.
Thank you for bearing with me so much, people. I had a hard time, but I'm getting better.
Glad to hear.
Yeah, a B-Day present. But, yeah, I kind of maybe brought it on myself. Anyway, enough about Watt. Let's talk about Bobby Hatfield and his musical journey. So please bring Bobby your earliest musical recollection if you can.
Oh, my earliest musical recollection. Oh, man, what is that? Oh, goodness. Probably listening to something related to Conway Twitty or Reba McEntire country music at my grandfather's house.
Dose used to do in a Darlington. Conway Twitty song. I think Imagine That. Well, what he did. Yeah.
I'm so out of familiarity with his stuff now, but yeah, country stuff on an old AM radio or something, probably in Darlington, South Carolina, if I if I remember right. Or in the furniture store my dad worked in, there was always like 80s music and country radio playing in the background.
So it was radio music was your first musical recollection.
I would say if I would speak to me hearing it, Yeah, it was.
Remember, it's a Watt from Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Awesome.
Okay. Don't you worry about that. Now, this Pat in Darlington, did it have musical instruments in it?
Well, so my grandfather was definitely a musician, and my parents, they had a gospel skin group in the 60s, 70s when they were younger. My grandfather, that's where my dad's from, Darlington, Florence, South Carolina area, and they music was just everybody did it. My grandfather had seven brothers.
I'm going to ask you the question again. Was there any instruments in the pad you grew up?
Yeah, all the time. A piano mostly. The one that I have in my house right now.
Let me ask you about the piano thing. Did you have to go through the piano lesson trip?
I did.
How was it for you? Because some cats have had on the show, they almost wanted to quit music.
It was weird. Every Friday for about all the way through most of my younger days, we would go to piano lessons. We drove an hour to do it. My brother and I both played.
You didn't use that piano that was in your pad that you got now?
I do. Actually, it was the same one that I learned and practiced on, and I didn't
take lessons.
Oh,
you would go for the lessons at another pad, and then you'd come back and
practice. Yeah, I would
go
somewhere else, yeah. Okay. My parents were good enough to pay for lessons growing up, and I...
How long did you do it, Bobby?
I didn't really start writing.
How long did you take lessons?
11 years,
and
probably.
And why were you doing that 11 years? You were also doing composing.
All the time.
Wow.
That didn't become public until I was in high school.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Please tell me the first record you bought with your own money.
Oh, what was the name of it? It was by his country guy. I'm embarrassed, but it is what it is.
I've come to the point at 65 that music is music, and this genre and calling things, sure, some people can do that, but some people dig gulags and, Berlin Walls, too.
Sure. That's true. But I don't mean to decry.
But
much of what I do now doesn't sound like country.
But it don't matter. Music is music. So...
Absolutely.
There's different ways of cutting the beat. There's different ways of doing polyrhythm, syncopating. There's different ways of doing harmonies and melodies. But this music, still music. That's the point I'm trying to make. So don't be embarrassed about any kind of genres. Man, you don't know what I had to go through being a punk rocker in the 70s. Oh, my God.
No doubt.
So anyway, the first record you bought with your own money?
It had something Darkness in the title by Billy Dean. I can't remember. It was something. His name was Billy Dean. That's all I remember. I'm gonna look it up. I want to know now.
Okay.
Now I have to know. I'm gonna look it up.
Now, how did you get it? Where'd you get it?
Together.
Where'd you get it?
It was in a CD store when those still existed.
Yeah, I remember those. about the first gig? What about the first gig you saw, Bobby?
First gig I saw. Oh wow. I really like this one. First big concert I remember was in Columbia. Ronnie Millsap, also a country guy.
Yeah.
Way back in the day. The record's called "It's What I Do" by Billy Dean. I bought it with my allowance because everyone was buying CDs that day, and I wanted one. So.
Well, I asked because you ain't got a lot of money when you're a kid, and so what did you first spend?
No, man.
That's why I asked.
It's my first $10.
Now let me. Bobby, let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Marching bands. Oh, that was my heart, man.
Now, what'd you do? What'd you do?
Drumline.
So you played drums, too. Okay. And which drum?
Yeah. I focused on snare. They had the whole center snare position. You do the snare line stuff.
Sure.
You also
sling it. I got to tell you, you didn't do match grip in those days because you slung it on the side. That's why your stick heads are different holes.
Traditional grip wasn't the way they teach you in middle school because I did band and elementary and all that in middle. But
right?
Match grip, but traditional is
do they have the snare drum in front of you? I know they got them toms, the three toms on the rack, and I know those guys you can do match grip, no problem.
Sure, yeah. It's definitely weird if you have to change drums. But that fixed drum, traditional grip, that's still a home of mine. I really love it.
They used to carry like
I don't avoid it, but I still love it.
Like the field drum was a fucking floor tom kind of, so it'd be there on the side, and it would be hard to do manuscript, so I could understand.
Yeah, I got that from my dad, too. He was, like, really into being a drummer when he's younger. He has a really vivid memory of being on the marching band field when they learned that Kennedy was assassinated. He was, like, holding a field drum in the moment.
I remember when it happened. I was five years old.
I bet,
When it happened. What I really remember was Lee Harvey Oswald getting shot by Jack Ruby coming out of that Dallas police garage. Yeah, because it was live on TV. Now let me ask you this. You know, when I go through on tour Dealey Plaza, Dallas, right, I always take my band guys. I remember Joe Biser saying, God, it looks so small in real life because everybody's seen the shit on TV, right? Let me ask you this. Snare drum in the marching band, but you've already been doing piano, so now you know two instruments.
Yeah, they were in parallel for a long time in school, and they were different disciplines just sort of happening in my life, and I really started to try to bring them together when I started playing with a band in high school and, like,
trying to write.
I was really skittish.
What about this? Trap Kit.
Trap Kit. Oh, so, yeah, so if I take your meaning, so I learned Trap Kit sort of self-taught.
Well, you know what Trap Kit...
sneaking out of study hall.
You know Trap Kit, you know what it literally means.
That's the drum set, right?
No, trap is short for contraption. No, it was this idea of you having tom, snare, kick. Yeah, because it's like they put a whole drum section in one fucking little unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were invented. They were invented, you know, I have drummer friends and shit in New Orleans. And it was like nobody knew what to do, right? Everybody was just trying whatever. Like the hi-hat used to be by your ankle, and they called it the sock cymbal and shit. And you only used your foot. Yeah, doop, 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 loop, psh. Yeah, be that shit. But then somebody thought I'd put it up higher, and you could play it with the sticks. Max Roach only did his solos when I saw him on the hi-hat. When did you get your first trap kit?
So, oh, man, it wasn't until I got it free in college myself out of somebody's storage shit. So I never really purchased one.
You didn't play trap drums in high school and stuff. Because I'm going to ask I'm going to ask you about after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon, the basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band. Did you do that kind of stuff?
I did in junior and senior year of high school. But here's the thing about Trap Kit. I want to speak to that because I actually did self-teach me in the band room. I would sneak out of study hall or ask to leave.
Yeah.
And I would go to the band room into this soundproof space. It was very privileged to have access to it, but I learned hi-hat with my left hand and snare drum with the right hand on the Trap Kit.
Wow.
And taught myself. And it took a while, but like I knew the beats in my hands, but not my feet. So it was a really great way to learn making beats physically, because I really wanted to learn. So I just like forced myself to do it. That was kind of my first
Yeah, but maybe that was the best way. Maybe that was the best way, because you get your own kind of style thing. Look, you gave me this Moses' Bones. I want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Only to turn to Moses' Bones. My name. turns are all closing like their chain. Apocalyptic lift kiss by the end of days. Enjoy your stay, your promise, it's the magnitude. Unless your social credit serves no room for you. Politicians on all sides. You cannot hear their songs in space, there's no guitar. Half on an empty planetary whiskey bar. The earth feels colder when the blues have turned to gray. I'm looking older from 100 million miles away.
For Peter Show, start off that chunk of music with Numb Tongue doing Moses' Bones, and I'm thinking of Ezekiel, right, with the dry bones, them bones.
That's
how they end the fucking last episode of The Prisoner. It's like some big sing along with them bones. Yeah. But no, it's a trip. He people got so pissed he had to move to Los Angeles and shit. And then after that was Spot, my old buddy from the SST days, with Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White. He's a hell of a viola. He calls it fedola because he plays it on his arm like a fiddle. And mandolin player, but also guitar. He's doing bass now. Loves. He's up in Sheboygan. Sheboygan. Yeah, Wisconsin. And, you know, his daddy was Tuskegee, one of the Tuskegee Airmen. Yeah, he never told us that. I didn't learn this until like years and years later. Francesco Fusaro / Fros with Preludio alla Francesa. And that's brand new. Bridge of Flowers with Year Without a Summer. Bull Shannon, Chris Carey here, with High on Nag Champa. I guess Chato Ghetto is over. Argo with Diesel, then Uni and the Urchins from their new record, Pop Star Supernova. Sky Furrows out of upstate New York. We just lost the drummer, man. The Clean. A Clean song called Don't Point That Thing Somewhere Else. Yeah. Okay. I don't know their music so well, but they go back. Rob Dobbins spec with a theme. SLW's Hemlock Ward and Bob Bucko Jr. out of Iowa with Landshark. And finally, Mirrorball from Numbtone. Okay, so the question that for the music was, I was always interested to learn about how you self-taught your drum. That's bitchin' way. And also repurpose some of the stuff, unused stuff at the public instructional institution. But what about, like I was asking you, like jamming? Now, you said the trap kit's in college and shit, but did you do any music during high school and junior high and shit?
Yeah, on two fronts. Actually, it brings memory back to my buddy, Alan, who was a saxophone player, tenor sax at school. And I didn't do the jazz band because I wasn't as capable to step into that space at that time on piano or drums. So I was really skittish about it. But he and I would actually jam in that room, and we got accused of making, like, acid jazz because I would just jam on the drums, and he would improvise on the saxophone, just a little duo. Uh-huh. We've done it. They've gotten together for years, and it's over. We're still friends, so we haven't done it in forever. But, yeah, that was literally, we would jam, literally what we called it. Hey, man, you want to jam today? And then an actual indie rock group formed called Bloom in high school, or The Bloom. We couldn't decide for a while with some buddies of mine. And he was in that playing saxophone, and I was doing keys, and that was like senior year of high school. And then before we knew it, we were leaving high school. So I snuck it in right at the end.
It was duet made out of keys, keyboard.
No, it was a duet of just drums and saxophone.
You were doing drums.
Yeah.
And we were doing piano.
With a friend of mine. And then we met three other guys, Danny John and Alex, who all kind of formed a band to do like some hybrid of like Dave Matthews and Coldplay. When we were in high school, and like, let's see if we can do it.
So even though you didn't have a trap, you could learn at school, and that's how you made this band. Now tell me about the material. John Coltrane, you did some covers?
His favorite to jam on, we would start play the head for In a Sentimental Mood, and then we would like break out into that.
That's an old time standard.
Jamming. I would always turn it into funk. Just because that was the kind of drumming I liked to do.
Oh, but there was a lot of improvising in the band.
Yeah, well, so with that duo, like, it was interesting. The band, The Bloom, we didn't actually do what he and I did separately as a duo. That was a five-piece that became, like, more pop rock focused.
Oh, okay.
But that other jam, it was, like, two separate musical experiences, honestly. And, but we knew each other that way, and so we were like, hey, let's play this way. And I actually played keys and sang in the other group, not drums. Guy John was the drummer, but...
Did you do any recording with both these projects?
Oh, favorite song in the little duo was Mercy, Mercy, Mercy between the two of us.
Okay.
Loved playing that. So.
Did you do any original stuff?
Unless we made it up on the spot, man. It was 100% improvisation. We never wrote anything and captured it.
Okay. And you said after high school, you went to college. Was it for music?
No, actually. I started in as a business administration here at school, and then I transferred out to this private institution in Columbia, in South Carolina, here called Columbia International University, and that was actually a Bible college. Still is. But I went there for 3 years after being a public university.
Bobby, I got to tell you, a lot of dudes learn how to sing rock and roll in church. I think Elvis Presley and, you know, Aretha.
Yeah.
A lot of music comes out of church. I think get it in static states, which is kind of like, you know, performances and stuff like that. So, but you were still doing music while you're studying this other stuff.
Yeah, oh, it never went away, man. Like, I should say, my performance experience and, like, sort of, like, getting the weebie-jeebies out, not only in school, but, like, singing in front of people is definitely church music. I mean, like, in that space weekly, there's no greater gig opportunity for some people because you just get so much on-hand experience and, like, you're kind of hanging out to dry a little bit sometimes on the music if you're, like, caught in between it. But that was where I learned what chord charts were. I didn't know what that meant. I just knew the piano. And then people showed me, hey, there's the letters can go over the words and there's the song. I was like, what? I don't know what this means. But okay, here we go. I guess I know this already, sort of.
When you were a boy, you didn't learn to read?
So we did learn to read sheet music, but I found chords all by myself, just sort of chromatically, one at a time.
Oh, okay.
In middle school.
Okay.
I would be home alone and stuff for a couple of hours, and instead of doing my homework, I'd either be watching TV or playing piano.
That's all right.
And no, I don't regret it at all. Like I had a challenge I kept doing with myself till I got it, where I would learn all the major and minor chords chromatically one at a time, like with my eyes closed. on the piano, chords and everything, the shape of it.
Yeah.
And that served me really well. And it was really interesting to discover how they all fit together as, like, the number system. I'd never really had it described, like, music theory-wise in my lessons because it didn't come up in detail. So we'd learn about the one chord, the four chord, and the five.
Yeah.
They'll throw it in the books occasionally, but they really focus on that.
Intervals,
right? So I was just chasing my heart and my ear, and I had so much time on my own that I really got to find my own voice at an early age, I think, on the piano. So, yeah, it was just what was in reach. I think it'd be creative, and music's definitely in my blood, my family, but it's just what was nearby to be, like, creative and right. Grab what made sense to me.
Well,
so,
different
yeah,
experiences, different paths. But music you share, but you got to find your own personal way.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, for sure, during college studying, and I mean, music was all parallel to what I was doing. I took a lot of musical electives and everything. But yeah, I didn't major in it.
That's okay. That's okay. You know, life has got a lot of dimensions and stuff. And
yeah,
sometimes
man.
Some people have horrible experiences, so they have to go outside of it. Some cats, they get all kinds of, you know, strength and, you know, it. Well, that's why I ask people about their musical journeys, because it seems like every fucking one is different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, has to be.
So, did you get into the shit about having a little four-track and record yourself?
Yeah. My first experience recording a song that was mine, that was for a friend of mine in school that I was having a tough time. It was titled For the Things You Cannot Control, was the name of the song. And I had kind of secretly been learning my brother's guitar he had gotten for Christmas. So I self-taught that after learning the piano, like just finding chords and like hurting my fingers, figuring out what it means to, you know, build both the calluses and stuff. And every interesting chord I'd learned, I turned on this cassette dual recorder thing we had on the top of the piano. My brother was a songwriter too, and he was doing that with the early analog stuff that we just had from my parents for years. Had all the old equipment laying around still. So, yeah, wasn't a four-track, just kind of like straight one.
I just say that. It could be anything. It could be a mono.
I know, yeah, absolutely.
Like,
yeah,
right nowadays, people use voice memo on the leash, right?
Here, gosh, I have 2,500 of those.
Bobby, right now. We're at the end of the first hour of the January 1, 2023 edition Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Bobby Hatfield. Hold tight for hour two. January 1st, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Nobody ever leaves. Get away.
Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Many Empty Rooms from Numb Tongue. Then we had the Almighty Yap with Something to Cry About, Noisuka with Algorithm, Stefano Pelia from Bologna, Italy, with Hannah, Headboggle, Bay Area, East Bay, Oaktown, Come Uptown, Derek, I got to record some stuff for his Come On's, the Come On's project, and then finally Numb Tongue with Glory Land, Bobby's got something to enlighten us with this Many Empty Rooms.
Yeah, so this song is actually a reprise of Glory Land on the original, the first record, Exhumation. It's the same chord progression in the end. Glory Land finds itself coming back at the end of that one. So it was all one song initially, and it just felt long. And I wanted both feelings to exist, but yeah. I separated them on the record. Just as like a sort of a trick to make it all pace well, and it ended up being a thematic helpful thing too, because you introduce the idea and then you bring it back later to kind of seal the deal.
Absolutely.
On the end. And
see, people, can be just as creative. It doesn't have to be chorus, bridge, reverse, whatever the fuck. You can be as creative as possible. Yeah.
So I'm terrible at that.
Yeah. So, but some people think it's like something's cut in stone, and sometimes there's just one part, people. Sometimes there's 10 million parts and everything in between.
Right.
Look, all you gave me to play was Numb Tongue stuff. Now, but between you doing that first song when we ended the first hour and then Numb Tongue, was there other projects?
Yeah, before Numb Tongue, I was in a group for about 5 years called the Seawolf Mutiny. Big, long name in Columbia, South Carolina.
Columbia, it's tricky to have a C name because it's in the middle of the state, people. Maybe Charleston, but Columbia is kind of tricky. No, look,
that group was really...
I got to tell you, Bobby, John Fogerty lived on a very northwest bayou. He was born on a very northwest bayou. Yeah, like El Cerrito is by Berkeley, right? Music, you know, arts are for about transcending the reality. So this, now, was this your band or was this a band you joined?
It was a band I formed with some friends of mine. Initially, my buddy Danny Oakes, who's helped me a lot on Numb Tongue. He's on this record most recently and the first one a bit. I've recorded some stuff, collaborating. He and I have been like in cahoots making songs for 15 years now, it feels like.
Yeah.
And that band was sort of our initial idea, and then it grew into about 5 members over time itself. That was my post-college musical sort of just kind of attempt to work out myself artistically in public with my friends, and it was very collaborative. Bands are, sometimes it just takes longer to make songs when you're in a connection together, and that process went into this one record we put out in 2011. It's actually just over 12 years old now. And we were going to do a reunion show in 2020, but the pandemic sort of like blew that up. So we're going to try to maybe do that again sometime in the future. But yeah, that group was more cinematic and larger and a bit of more of an epic rock sound. But we started writing it in 2009, 2011, so we released it. It's an album called The Last Season. That was our only record we put out. And,
well, what about
near
gigs?
Near and dear to my heart, because it worked out great.
What about gigs and stuff? And did that band ever do touring?
Yeah, not a full tour. We got as far as New Orleans. We had a lot of cool bills. We traveled here and there, but we didn't get a full tour off the ground as a group. We had actually just bought an old Winnebago RV in the attempt to hopefully go after that and do it. And
my advice is don't try to tour in something like that.
It was so old and broke down.
And they're so fucking hard to park and just everything. They're nightmares. They're nightmares.
Oh, man.
They're nightmares.
It sounded like a pod racer from Star Wars. but anyway, we got out. We actually were on a festival with of Montreal in Natchitoches. It played a thing called Demon Fest back in, 2014, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that comes to my mind as one of the furthest gigs we went out and did from our region. And I was sick going into that, and I was like, crap, I don't want to cancel. So I wore a mask in the car. I saw a picture of me with that mask on the other day. I was like, oh, it's like a foreshadow.
You had a premonition, Bobby.
Oh, it was so weird to look at me with a mask on in these old photos.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, well, if you ever, I don't know if you've ever traveled to Asian stuff, but they've had an old tradition of that too. Because
the trains, yeah, no, I've never been over there.
Well, they pack the trains, you know. So if somebody's sick, it's smart to do it for the other people. So even with a flu or shit, you know.
So, no doubt.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to play some more Numb Tongue.
What lost? too close to see, and it only made sense once it was too late. If it's too late,
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Numbtongue doing I Will, You Will. Then Imbernon and Michael Vega with No Samar. Ray Shin with Empty Threats and Cigarettes, and Numb Tongue again with The White of Your Eyes. Tell me about Numb Tongue. How did it get started? I mean, what was the first song you wrote for it? What was the first gig?
Yeah, the first song was called Such Face. It's actually a single that's only on Bandcamp. I've been meaning to actually re-release that into regular streaming world, or all the rest of them, I guess. It was called Such Face, and it was kind of my first attempt at, like, orchestrating everything myself, like, producing the track, and it's still one of my proudest achievements as a song. Like, I love it. It was more of an experimental offshoot from my previous group, the Seawolf Mutiny. Like, I'd been in a group for a while, and then I was like, what's it like to be solo? What does this mean? And, the first track that came out, probably 2015, I guess. It's like summer of that year, I think. It's been a while now. And I think my first gig that I felt was unofficially so, because I played them, was Halloween in front of a local theater. I was wearing an emoji mask. Somebody asked me to bust for a while.
Yeah.
I was like, sure, I'll do it. And sort of surreptitiously played it outside. It was actually with a company I worked for, Freeway Music. I teach music there,
okay,
here in Columbia. And they actually asked me, it's like, hey, they want some people to busk out there, and they're asking some of our, you know, who we know as musicians, and you're a teacher here, do you want to try it? I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I feel like this was an early Numb Tongue performance of sorts. Anyway, I was out there in a smiling
We're talking man alone, right? No one's
yeah,
talking.
Oh yeah, battery-powered equipment, like, really, it was lo-fi as I'll get out. And I was playing everything from Massive Attack to, like, some Blade Runner-inspired stuff, and then some Numb Tongue stuff that hadn't been played.
Okay, Numb Tongue.
I think
where did you get the name Numb Tongue?
So it's this idea, I think, of, I remember saying, I think in an early show, you can't taste it, but you know it's there. It's this idea of your, I don't know, it's a experiment of the minds of sorts, but, like, also, I feel like in conversations I've had, artists don't really say that many different things. They just change how they say it over their lifetime. They're orbiting probably the same feelings or the same process on some level.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen, but I even feel like somebody that changed as much as Bowie, right? There was still the same creative entity, person, self in there. So it's an experiment in the self, and, like, I feel like I've said the same thing enough that, like, it becomes my tongue gets numb from saying it.
Words, the little notes, the rhythms, they don't carry as much weight unless you give them a focus, you give them a personal meaning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, this is what I'm getting from it. I like this idea of the numb tongue, because a lot of shit, it seems like people just make a small talk to fill the air, and there's shit don't carry much weight.
Yeah, and it's been weird, man. Like, I think that the first record was definitely an experiment of, like, just a psyche of trying to be really abstract with, like, what it meant to deal with my own experience with my own psychology, theology, and philosophy, like, trying to, like, meld that together like broken pieces. There's a track called Disjecta Member, actually, on there, that's this idea of the, I can't remember the quote from who it was, but it was this, it's like the job of the poet to piece together the fragments of the truth in the universe, and, like, try to put it together and, like, I don't know, present it.
I think it was one of those old Greek philosophers that said analyzed life is worth living.
Yeah. And I think that the second one recently has been, like, you know, more of a bit more of a heart on my sleeve a bit more again. Like, even though it's experimental, like, it's a lot more emotional than the previous one. In certain ways, more obviously, I find them both to be part of me emotionally. But, like, the first one, I was definitely experimenting to the max on a lot of the tracks, and that kind of came into the second record that just came out, Phantom Limbs. But it was more just like the past 5 years have been, like, tough in other ways personally, and just with what's going on outside the world. Yeah, it was a lot to process.
It doesn't take a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. But Bobby, we're at the end of the second hour of the January 1st, 2023 edition Watford Pedro Show with the best special guest, Bobby Hatfield. Hold tight for hour 3. January 1, 2023. It's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
about. Boy, I do not know you. Boy, I do not know you. As if you were anyone.
For Pedro Show, start off the third hour with Numb Tongue doing For the Goodness of Your Heart, and Witch Egg, which is John Dwyer from the OCs, one of his new projects, opened up for Flipper a couple months ago, Greener Pools, and Numb Tongue again after that with Constant. So Bobby, you're talking about the two albums and the difference between,
yeah.
But in a in a way, they're kind of the same. It's Man Alone, and then you bring in buddies to help you?
Yeah, so that's always kind of been the live band has sort of come around occasionally, and then I've been more bold to be solo lately, even playing some loops and backing tracks, just because the songs seem to be, like, able to live on their own regardless, and I've always been really skittish about leaving a band behind, so I've tried to always play with people, because it's just how I like being musical with others. But, yeah, a lot of the craftsmanship has been solo now for 6-7 years. Actually, today is the birthday of my first Dumb Tongue record. It came out New Year's Day 2017. I should say that's the real time I stepped it out into the world. I stuck it out and didn't tell anybody. I was just like, surprise. But,
maybe that's the best way, because then there's no fucking hype. You know what I mean? If you're telling it, yeah, there's no hype, right? You just bring it on them, yeah. Tell me your process. What is your process? Because you said something about you having all these fucking phone memo, voice memos. Do you make demos?
Yeah, so weirdly with this project, because the tech is just so insane to work with now. Like, I've used Logic Pro for years, and I'll start writing sometimes in the program as a demo, and I have often built a lot of the first record was like this, built from the demo itself and recorded in that same space, almost like the rough draft. There's pieces of the rough draft.
I had Joey Warnicker on the show, drummer man, and he said he recorded with Pete Townsend, and he says that's what you do. When you record for Pete, you replace the things from the demo, but the demo is actually like the backbone of the tune.
Well, sometimes mine is not just the backbone, it's actually still audible in the song. Like, that's exactly how I do it. Like, I'll put layers around it to, like, build almost like a, I don't know, it starts like, is it a cake? I don't know. It's layers.
But what you're telling me is some parts survive from the demo stage, not everything gets replaced. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. And that was actually what was interesting using, there on the first record, there's a lot of voice memos of, like, kids' toys and, like, different, like, ambient sounds in those transition tracks that I pitched down to match a piano, but they were recorded on my phone, and I just threw them together and, like, put it through the right filter, and that's the sauce. I feel like everything is the sauce that makes it work. And,
but sauce needs to be put on something, right, unless it's a soup.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of the songs that I've brought into Dumb Tongue were initially crafted for other bands, or, like, they were already charted but never released, recorded or demoed, and then I would take them and sort of take parts out of them and pull them apart and put them back together.
Repurpose them.
A bit like a collage. Repurpose them. Yeah, there's a few tracks like that, and I'm talking, you know, it's this most recent one, I didn't expect to, I wanted to track more live drums, because almost all the drums I've tracked, there's only a few live ones, almost all of it's finger drums and computers.
And you're talking about you playing them yourself.
I am. I'm playing most of it live, but on a keyboard. Like, I try to be as organic as I can, but some of the samples are so much better than I can get on my own, like, lo-fi mics, like, in-house, and it's just, you love the way it sounds. I feel like I'm cheating, but I sort of had to get over that.
No, I don't think it's cheating. At the end of the day, remember Wizard of Oz and Frank Morgan says, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain? He was the fucking dude behind the curtain. I mean, at the end of the day, people are hearing what comes out the speakers. They don't know how you make it and stuff. I don't think it's cheap.
I know.
Yeah, sound is sound. Music is music.
I got over that.
Yeah.
I got over that and, like, had to – I didn't mean to argue, man. Sorry. I felt the need to, like, as a drummer at heart, like, I know what it means to play the embodied thing for real. But then I was like, well, piano's percussion too, so it's fine.
Absolutely.
And I actually really love being able to reach for – more, you know, I felt that when I was in, you know, concert band in high school. Like, I miss having access to all those instruments for free. You have to, like, work for it now or pay somebody to, like, go be in there.
Right. You know, piano used to always be in the rhythm section in them horn bands because they were so fucking loud. Everybody who wasn't a horn was in the rhythm section. I Want to Play Your Heart is buried in my head.
Thank you. True, for now, my world's gonna be
For Peter, show last music for this edition. Started that chunk off of Your Heart Is Buried in My Head. Numb Tongue, then Horalunga with Viren 1 and 2, and finally Numb Tongue. Finish your sentence. Now, Bobby was telling me about some interesting musical observations he's got. Enlighten us, Bobby.
So, yeah, I feel like a lot of what the tech that you have now that's in reach, like when it's hard to like pay to hire out people that, you know this instrument. I know all these people that play, a lot of folks that I could ask to play on records for me. And I want to be able to do more of that in the future. But sometimes I'll get in the writing process, start crafting something, and I can reach for this this sound of a cello section or something in the background, but I can put it through enough of a filter that it sounds so high quality a lot of times now that you can place it and produce it in the moment in a way that you just, the idea explodes in front of you, like, wow, that's, I gotta keep that. And for me, especially as a percussionist, like having things within reach that are like all these infinite amounts of samples. I remember when I first got my MIDI controller, like an 88 key when I was younger, having access to plug that into your laptop and like you've got a million sounds, it was almost too much. So finding my way into like honing it down creatively to like using what's within your limits, I've tried to like balance the limitlessness of tech and what's actually physically around you instrument wise. Your instruments that I've got inherited from people or like just that I'm already playing, like build it from the ground up, but then when you need to polish the ending, like open yourself up to all the options that are available to finish the product. And I love what that means. It's a lot of hard work to take a demo phase with like these, and to put that final sheen on it when you're on your own is a lot of work. I've done everything on my own so far. So.
All the production, all this stuff. What about the engineers and things? You too?
Yeah, that's me for now. There's been some mixing.
The stuff sounds really good. You've done a great job, man. I've seen this more and more in the older days, like when me and D. Boone and Georgie were young Minutemen. There was a huge divide between dudes playing and dudes recording. And so many musicians now are recording themselves because, like you said, the tech got more econo and also more powerful. And, you know, think about Jimi Hendrix on electric guitar and Andre Segovia on, nylon string Spanish guitar. It's still guitar. And at the end of the day, it might not be guitar. Like you're talking about samples and stuff, but it's sound coming out of speakers or earbuds, I guess, nowadays. And how it gets there, I don't think is as important as experience of that person swimming into your artistic musical expression. Bobby, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, social media. Instagram is at numbtongue.
No, but is there a Bobby Hatfield website?
No, there
just
was
corporate
one
ones, okay.
For new. But yeah, most of it's social media. Numbtonguebandcamp.com. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music.
And people, it's one word. Let's tell the listeners. Numbtongue. Okay.
That's
correct. Especially for listeners that English ain't first. You know, we spell shit weird.
That's it. I know. And
how do you get the word ice?
Word,
like, yeah, I know. Or the word ice. How do you get that from that spelling? I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You got to hear it and let somebody tell you. And what's your next plan?
You know, this year I'm going to try to play out in the region a little more, the Numb Tongue in places I haven't been before. I might actually do a solo tour for the first time.
Yeah.
To get out on the road further that way. And I'm hoping to push Phantom Limbs, release it late in the year. And I kind of just want to see about doing some collaborations. I've already talked to a buddy of mine out in New Mexico about doing that. I've never really tried before. And really, I'm trying to keep options open. Phantom Limbs is something I just needed to extrude. I was sitting on the track for years. And now that it's out, I'm like, I'm so bad, I want to moan the next thing, like, immediately, but then you need to play what you've just done so people can, like, know what happens. But I'm going to do both. I feel like I never stop writing, so I'm starting
like,
the track today.
If you could do the one-man tour, the Man Alone tour, and you're doing this Numb Tongue stuff, obviously it's not going to be exactly the same. What are you going to do, like karaoke, laptop, Chris Face,
sometimes it's like that. Yeah. I've got some of the beats, mainly the drums, like I'll repurpose them to where it doesn't sound as canned live or it feels like it fits in a live setting as best I can.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you just play the track and then you get in and you keep up with it. And because I know them innately, like the back of my hand is really just like breathing. So the track still has that live spontaneity, but it's also kind of – on a fixed plane. But I never want to take away the live band element. I've got a three-piece going right now when we play live.
Are you going to record them?
We'll see. I don't know. I want to leave options open.
I want to give you an invite, Bobby. Whatever you do, live or man alone, whatever, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
I would love to do that.
Okay. Beautiful.
That sounds great.
And you, a commitment there, Bobby. You bring it when you're ready.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And big respect to Dylan for making the connect. People, it's been the January 1st, 2023 WAP Pedro Show. Happy New Year. Hoping for a good one, right, people? Let's do it. Keep your powder dry.